I'm Rochelle Carey.
And I'm Josh Rushing, and you're in the stream.
The Al Jazeera Media Network turns 25 years old this month. And today we're looking back at a history marked by obstacles, threats, and attacks, and a reputation of fair journalism focused on the world's unheard stories.
So you may be wondering why I'm here with Rochelle today, right? My first interaction with Al Jazeera started back in 2004 at Central Command in Doha, which was just a few miles away from Al Jazeera's headquarters. But I was not a journalist then. I was a U.S. Marine. It was during the U.S. invasion of Iraq. In many ways, Al Jazeera was just as much of the story as the war at that moment. And this clip from Control Room documented some of that time.
We believe that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, that they had the will to use them against us.
When?
What do you mean, when?
When did they use them against you?
That they have the will to use them against us?
When? I mean, do you think Saddam...
When you say someone has
Saddam,
that's like saying...
I mean, Saddam was threatening the U.S. with weapons of mass destruction?
Yes.
When? That's news to me, I'm sorry. This is news to me.
Okay.
When did Saddam threaten the U.S. with weapons of mass destruction?
Oh, I see. I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. We believe he had the will to give them the forces to use against us, and... Well, go ahead.
I'm just conveying to you what people are saying. They're saying that the U.S. is inventing a purpose as it goes along. At the beginning, it was weapons of mass destruction, and then the whole thing transformed into removing Saddam from power. So...
Why do they think we're doing it? What do they think our motives are?
No one knows. I mean, people think
really?
You're there. People think you're there to basically control the oil of Iraq, control the Iraqi foreign politics, to control the region.
We'll circle back to Josh in a moment. Right now, we are joined by Dima Khatib, one of the original Al Jazeera journalists at the founding. Now, she's the managing director of the AJ Plus channels.
And here with us on set is Abdurrahim Fakura. He's the Al Jazeera Bureau Chief for the Americas, the host of Men Washington on Al Jazeera, and a veteran journalist of the network.
And we really want you to be part of this conversation as well. So feel free to join our YouTube chat to be part of this conversation. We'll monitor the comments and be reading them throughout this show. So I want to go back to Doha right now to, let's call her day one, Dima. Dima Khatib, who has been with Al Jazeera from day one. Dima, does it feel like 25 years?
I joined not day one. I joined a year after the launching of Al Jazeera. It was very small. Mm. It does feel like a lot more in terms of what we've done, what we've achieved. But yeah, it went by so fast at the same time. So much has happened since the launch of Al Jazeera in the region, because it really changed the media landscape in the Arab world. And I think it shook the way media was covering a lot of events in the world. So one thing I can say, I'm very proud to be part of this until today.
Okay, so I'm going to refresh your memory about a moment in history that I'm sure you don't need a reminder about that particular moment, but maybe your reaction to what was happening during the fall of Baghdad. I want to show you something that you were watching as this event was happening.
I still can't believe it. So I don't know what to say. Really, it's for us. It's really shocking how quickly the regime fell. Where is the Republican Guard? Where is the Iraqi army? There must be somewhere. They couldn't have just vanished.
Asking all the right questions, even back then. What does that watch that? Does it take you back to that moment?
Yeah, it takes me back. Always when people ask me about this, I am puzzled again how this whole thing happened. It was so traumatizing for us to live the moment, that moment of the fall of Baghdad and the whole thing that preceded the war on Iraq. And it's a little bit sad to think that, things have not changed so much in politics since that day. We just kind of grew a little bit more mature, so we react differently. But I think war is still there. We still cover wars. At the time, of course, it was a huge story for us, and I was in that control room literally every day. We were just four people supervising coverage live, and we had exclusive coverage every day. We felt that power of the duty, actually, to use that power to convey what otherwise would not have been conveyed. The same thing from Afghanistan, same thing so many times from Palestine. So it is empowering for me to watch that and remember those moments. And we've done this so many times over and over in Al Jazeera. We keep doing it.
I come away watching that clip of you, Dima, wondering how time has been so kind to you, and I've aged so much. we were in the same movie at the same time, right? Like, what time warp did you go through that you jumped here without aging the 20 years necessary? And on set, I'm joined with Abdurrahim. The first time I think I may have saw you, actually, before I met you personally, was when you were on Charlie Rose. And Charlie Rose at that time, now he's become something quite different, but this is the intelligentsia of America tuning in, and here you were having this conversation about Al Jazeera that was so different than what most Americans thought about it. When did you come to Al Jazeera? What drew you to it?
I came listening to people talk about Al Jazeera as doing feisty journalism. Mm. And when you compare that with the kind of journalism that was then done in the Arab world, very anodyne, basically, it was the voice of the government in place in any one Arab country. And then you started to have this feistiness, Faisal Qasim's The Opposite Direction, for example. This kind of narrative that Dina was talking about, trying to cover wars that were affecting people in the region down to their daily bread from a different perspective, mm-hmm. not shying about raising the difficult questions. So that attracted me to Al Jazeera, which I joined, coming from BBC, coming from public radio here in Boston, coming from AllAfrica.com, coming to Al Jazeera. You know, when preparations were beginning for the invasion of Iraq, my first assignment with Al Jazeera, my first major assignment, was to cover President Bush's address to the General Assembly of the United Nations in the fall of 2002 about Iraq. Mm-hmm. And then the invasion happened in March. And since then, to me, when I say 25th anniversary of Al Jazeera, 25 years, it sounds somehow different from saying a quarter of a century. I mean, this is a network that has basically enshrined the history of the region in the minds of the people of the region, but also globally.
Mm-hmm. Can we show my computer? This is you on Charlie Rose at that time. I'm just curious, what was it like being, basically, you become the face of Al Jazeera in America at this moment, which is the buildup to the Iraq War. What did Americans think about Al Jazeera then, and what kind of backlash were you getting from this?
I mean, it was mixed feelings. I mean, that interview to me was the beginning of Al Jazeera breaking into the mainstream in the United States, the mm-hmm. mainstream media. Mm-hmm. Those appearances on Charlie Rose, there were quite a few of them. Mm-hmm. There were appearances on MSNBC, on ABC. So the world was beginning to pay attention. And obviously, the mixed feelings that Americans had, there were also Americans who were very critical of Al Jazeera. Arabic, obviously, we're talking about at that time, Al Jazeera English did not exist yet. Mm-hmm. But there were people who thought that Al Jazeera was, you know, the mouthpiece of Osama bin Laden, broadcasting those tapes of Osama bin Laden and so on. But I do remember distinctly when I covered some of the rallies against the invasion of Iraq here in the United States, as you may recall, some of the biggest rallies in the world against the invasion of Iraq happened here in the United States. And many people, as they saw the mic of Al Jazeera, many people came to us, incidentally, including Susan Sarandon in New York, and they said, we want you to tell people in the Middle East that not all Americans are for the invasion. So Americans had a mixed approach to Al Jazeera.
Yeah, it might be helpful to put the Donald Rumsfeld was one of those people.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And covering the war, obviously, there's risks with covering a war, mm-hmm. And a lot of criticism. We're going to get to Donald Rumsfeld in just a moment. First, mm-hmm. I want to show something that happened to Jazeera's offices in Baghdad during the war. Covering a war is risky, and it costs people lives, and that includes the lives of journalists. So let's watch this.
شيل الكاميرا شيل الكاميرا شيلها عن طارق طلعها على الجو طلع الكاميرا على الجو على على المكان التقليدي على
I shouted at them telling them to move the camera out of the face of this guy because he has nothing to do with the event the fighting and they moved the camera
كمان كيف الصورة عندك الآن تحت شايف؟
10 minutes later, I was on the phone with the other correspondent and he said there's a plane turning over us and now it's coming towards us and it's, he said, picking down, nose down, which means a formation of attack. And the American plane came and launched the missiles against our office. And the explosion killed Tar Ayyub.
It's obviously a very difficult clip to watch, and Dima, I could see your reaction. You flinched, as one would imagine. How does it feel for you to remember colleagues who have been lost trying to cover these stories for us?
Yeah, it was a really sad moment for all of us. I remember that moment very well. We've been targeted many times. I mean, this was the beginning of it. If you look at Al Jazeera today, we're banned from working in so many Arab countries. Some of our journalists have been jailed or even are jailed still. Bureaus have been shot. Journalists have been killed. And we even had somebody taken to Guantanamo. Yeah, it comes with a big sacrifice. And that's because we challenge the status quo. We speak truth to power. And that's scary for people in power. It's very simple. Really simple.
You say that's when it began. Yeah. But actually, in Afghanistan, the U.S. blew up the Al Jazeera offices there. And it continues to say this summer, the Al Jazeera office in Gaza was destroyed. And so it is a pattern time and time again. I'd like to go back to this kind of challenging people in power. And we have a soundbite that I'd like to share. And it's when you sat down and interviewed Donald Rumsfeld after the war. This is a classic example of how somehow, one, you're there as a journalist, but at the same time, when you do that kind of interview in the West, you're also representing Al Jazeera in a way beyond just being a journalist, because he calls you out on it. Here, let's watch this bite.
Do you think that the numbers you went into Iraq, the numbers of U.S. troops that you went into Iraq with, did absolve you from the responsibility of tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqis killed by the coalition and those criminals that you talked about?
Now, are you going to stop?
Give me a straight answer.
Look, you can characterize my answers any way you want, and you do it in a pejorative way.
No, I'll do it respectfully.
No, you don't at all. You're obviously of that nature. It's clear that you're being that you like to do that.
No, I'm asking you respectfully, please.
No, you're not.
I mean, don't talk about that.
You're not being respectful. You're just talking over and over and over and repeating yourself.
You have just disparaged me as a member of Al Jazeera, but that's okay. Just give me a straight answer.
How did I disparage you? I said you're not being respectful. You're just talking over and over.
He says you're just talking over and over and over. There's a quote in Control Room where he says they tell lies and they show it over and over. He loves that over and over and over again. But would he have asked any other journalist or from any other network that it's of your nature, it's of your being? Like, clearly he's putting not just you, but Al Jazeera kind of on the spot in that interview. What's it like? Like, how do you deal with that as a journalist?
I mean, I at that moment, I couldn't tell whether he meant you were of that nature as an Arab or he meant you were of that nature as, you know, somebody working for Al Jazeera. I didn't want to go down the route of that he may have meant it as an Arab, because that would have taken me in a different direction. Mm-hmm. So I went with the other route. Okay, you're disparaging me as a member of Al Jazeera. I mean, that what he failed to get is, number one, that I wasn't his student, because at some point in the opening of the interview, he started to give me a lecture about how to do my job. So I wasn't his student. But more importantly, the message that went completely unnoticed by him is that he was talking to an audience in the Arab world. He was challenged, fiercely challenged, by an Arab journalist in America. And that Arab journalist in America is not going to disappear at 4 o'clock in the morning, like what happens in the Arab world. To me, that was a major message, and he just completely missed it. But the idea that on the same day that he did an interview with AJE and he did that interview with me representing AJA, obviously he was paying a lot of... He was giving a lot of importance to a network which he'd never stopped disparaging. And suddenly, on the same day, he decided to do two interviews. And, you know, as we saw there, things got very, very, very tenuous. And I circle back to the original argument that I made. A lot of people who worked for Al Jazeera at that time, even those who started, you know, like the Vanguard, who started 25 years ago, what attracted them most of all is that this is a platform that allowed them to do feisty journalism as opposed to the anodyne journalism that was predominant throughout the Middle East at that time.
Yeah, the real irony of Rumsfeld is he would say during the war that Al Jazeera lies over and over and over again. Now history knows that Al Jazeera was actually telling the truth, that Rumsfeld was lying over and over and over again about connections to terrorism, about WMD in Iraq, about things that cost hundreds of thousands of lives, and yet no one's really ever been held accountable. And then he goes and goes on the network that he says tells lies. Somehow, like, how does he cut it both ways?
You know, there was something in his mind. First of all, I have to say that he's, as a brain, mm-hmm. he's obviously a very brainy former defense secretary. Mm-hmm. The way he could twist things and make arguments, mm-hmm. you know, looked at negatively. He's a unique mind. But to him, you know, what really triggered me in that interview was he started saying things like democracy, and we got democracy to Iraqis, and that's worth the cost. Mm. And I'm trying to tell him, you know, try to tell an Iraqi family who lost a son or two or three or a husband or a mother or a child, try to give them this argument that democracy is good for you. It would not make one bit of sense to them. And, you know, I found him completely insensitive to that part of it, which is the human part that, you know, posited against his idea of taking democracy to Iraq.
You just jumped to the heart of what makes Al Jazeera different. And it's the centering of the Iraqi families. He had never really seen media that centered something other than a Western perspective, other than really a white American perspective or a British perspective, if you ever watched the BBC. But Al Jazeera came along and put people that look like the rest of the people in the world at the center of the story. And I think it's one of the things that made us really different, something I'm really proud of.
No, absolutely.
And that's something that Al Jazeera Arabic and also Al Jazeera English continued with that mission when they launched, not 25 years ago, but about 15 years ago. So let's go ahead and kind of pivot now to bring in Al Jazeera English to show you literally the moment that the network launched. You'll get a kick out of this.
Welcome to the world news from Al Jazeera and the very first program live from our Doha news headquarters here in the heart of the Middle East.
In the next hour, we'll be going live to the world's top news stories.
I'm Nurode in the Gaza Strip, which has been brought to the brink of chaos and despair by sanctions, siege and shelling.
I'm Haru Mitasa in Darfur, scene of the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
I'm Raghi Omar in Tehran. Could Iran's president really hold the key to peace in the Middle East?
I'm Farai Savenzo in Zimbabwe, where every day can be a battle for survival.
On Al Jazeera, we'll be setting the news agenda. In this hour, we'll also be reporting from Brazil on an indigenous community with one of the highest suicide rates in the world. the Democratic Republic of Congo, where a disputed election could still lead back to civil war. And from Somalia, Africa's most dangerous city is peaceful for now, but for how long?
We'll also go to Russia as George Bush starts his first foreign visit since defeat in the midterm elections. To Jerusalem for reaction to a fatal rocket attack on an Israeli town. On to Afghanistan, billions spent on rebuilding. Where's the money gone? And to China for a joyride with the boy racers of Beijing.
Must be nothing.
So a dynamic opening like that with people all over the world with that big video wall, those things are normal now. They were not the norm back when Al Jazeera English launched. Dima, I want your reaction to seeing that and how it really did change the landscape of how news is presented and the perspective from which it is presented.
Yeah, I think Al Jazeera clearly put the global south on the map in a way that other media had not done before, and in a way that made the media change after. So I think that's what I remember seeing this video, how important the role of Al Jazeera has been in reaching out to places like Africa, places like Latin America, places like Asia, or communities within the countries that are usually covered but that are not usually heard, that have not had a voice before. The diversity of our people, the diversity in color, in race, in ideologies, in gender, everything. It was really, the number of nationalities we had from the beginning in Al Jazeera English, which brought in a different kind of people, obviously, to the people we had in Al Jazeera Arabic. We used to call Al Jazeera English the second wife, favorite one. Yeah. I just remember that because it brought all these amazing people from around the world, and it became like a venue kind of center of attention.
But Dima, we came from around the world because of respect for people like you and Abdul Rahim. We were attracted to the kind of journalism you were doing. As you know, I was with us at the launch. I left the Marines. I helped launch Al Jazeera English. And I used to do a lot of media here. And I'm just going to go to my screen. This is how they used to promote me coming on air. Look at this. Traitor. We show a picture from Control Room. Traitor. The Today Show did it, too. Called me anti-American was my strap. Simply because I was saying, you know, that Al Jazeera is something you should watch, you should listen to. And, you know, back then, I think our motto was give a voice to the voiceless. And I don't know if we use that anymore. I don't think we should, because of my experience at Jazeera has been we give a voice to marginalized communities, but they have a voice.
They absolutely have
They're
a voice.
They're not voiceless. They absolutely. Don't have a platform. And that's what Al Jazeera changed. That's the game changer. We gave them a platform.
Absolutely. And as an American coming to Al Jazeera, it completely changed my perspective. I mean, I had moments where I felt guilty that why hadn't I thought of this point of view before? Well, that's not the news that I grew up watching. And then when you come to Al Jazeera, from top to bottom, our newscasts are full of people that you know were there, but you really had not put a microphone in front of them, unless you were talking about a famine or a war. And there were one-dimensional people. That was the way in which they were often covered in the media and the Western media, and specifically the white Western media. As a black woman, the media often did not speak to me, period, Western or otherwise. And I saw Al Jazeera as a place to give a platform to all of those voices, including people in South America, which I know is a place that means a lot to Dima.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, on South America, for example, what we did in Al Jazeera is let go of the mediator. And the mediator was the news agencies that carry the narrative of the former colonizers. So news between South America or Latin America and the Arab world came only from agencies that are based in London, in Paris, in Madrid, in Washington. So there was always this filter of the North,
right,
that we eliminated by going directly from Latin America to the Arab world. And that was very obvious. If you put me,
Dima,
a New York Times reporter.
I'm going to have to wrap you there. I know you have great, wonderful stories to tell, and we appreciate the time and the energy and the love that you have given to the network. You as well, Deborah Heeman, and you too, Josh.
Thanks, Michelle. I appreciate that.
All right. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for co-hosting. We'll see you here tomorrow.